The Defense Department's Joint Rapid Acquisition Cell is responsible for coordinating the department's efforts to fill its crucial and often unanticipated operational needs. These are requirements combatant commanders and warfighters often discover they need after yearly budgets have been set. As part of our special report, The Missing Pieces of Procurement Reform, I spoke with Andrew Hunter, director of the cell. He explains how rapid acquisition works.
Our job is to take those requirements when they're identified and when the joint staff has confirmed them and make sure that the services figure out which service or agency is best scaled to fill that need and help them get it done.
Now, a few years back, then-Secretary Gates said that we have to have MRAPs. It was in Iraq. And where the heck are they? And all of a sudden, a lot of wheels turned very quickly, and the MRAPs were delivered in record time. Is this the kind of thing that you're trying to do?
Absolutely. It's one of our classic examples. And, you know, it's kind of an interesting case study because it shows up some of the challenges that you run into with rapid acquisition. You know, with the MRAPs, for example, one of the chief challenges was just trying to figure out who was empowered to make a decision to say, we're going to make a multi-billion dollar investment to buy a new platform that is, you know, similar in kind, although better than something that we already have, which was the up-armored Humvee. And it's worth it to make that multi-billion dollar investment for the, you know, for the added protection. And our system struggled with making that decision. It didn't have a really good way to even, you know, formulate that issue for decision because it wasn't just a Marine Corps requirement, it wasn't just an Army requirement, it was a joint requirement. And so we really have engineered and developed a process now to make those decisions. In the case of the MRAP, it was Secretary of Gates who put his foot down and said, I'm making the decision. But we don't want, as a routine matter, to have the Secretary of Defense get involved, you know, to just make decisions about requirements on warfighter requirements. Not all of them are of the scale and scope of an MRAP.
Sure.
So we've developed a process now with the joint staff working with OSD where we can make those decisions. And then what happens is it becomes de facto by policy the highest priority of the department to fill that requirement. And that allows us to move the resources that's necessary to get it done.
Any recent examples since the MRAPs?
There are several. We don't have quite as many of these as we did at the height of Iraq and Afghanistan. At one time, we had over 530 validated urgent operational needs. Now we're more down in the 30 to 40 range. So there's many fewer of them, but it continues to happen. The most recent example, which is an interesting one that has, you know, kind of delivered and completed, was the system that went on to the Cape Ray that was used to destroy the Syrian chemical weapons. That was an urgent operational need, identified actually before we even had the international agreement to destroy those weapons. But when it was clear to the department that their destruction was something that was likely going to need to happen and that was likely going to need to be something that the United States would be involved in. And so we took technology that had been used in a fixed site locations in the United States for the U.S. chemical weapons inventory, which has been destroyed largely, and we converted that into a mobile system that was then installed on the Cape Ray and successfully finished and completed the destruction of over 600 tons of those chemical weapons precursors. So that's a pretty recent example, largely concluded, we think, of where we fielded something within the space of less than a year and were able to immediately put it into use.
And the boat itself, was that part of the whole process? I don't think it was a Navy ship to begin with, correct?
It was a MARAD ship, so it's a U.S. government ship, a reserve fleet ship, and it was activated. This equipment was installed. A few other things were installed in order to make it operationally suitable for the mission that it had. And of course, there were some security issues there. So the ship, it didn't require any technology development. It was an existing ship, but it was definitely, you know, repurposed and a little bit modified and upgraded for this mission.
So the big question is, if you look at the DFAR and all of the case law surrounding that and the regulations that govern federal procurement, is something like this rapid acquisition activity something that is allowable and doable and fashionable under existing regulations, or did you need new enabling legislation to be able to do this?
By and and large, we have been able to do it under our existing regulations. So our system has within it a lot of flexibility to tailor. And rapid acquisition is really just sort of the most tailored process that we can do. You know, that the way we've described it is when you're involved with rapid acquisition, you're dealing with urgent needs, schedule becomes a predominant priority. And so everything else becomes secondary to the need to deliver as quickly as possible. And so that means you have to limit your ambitions a little bit sometimes and what you reach for in terms of capability. And it means that you tailor your process to the maximum extent possible. And what we found is that we can do this. So we've proven to ourselves with programs like MRAP and the CAPRE and others that we can do it. We can do it within the regulations, provided that we have, the sort of mental fortitude to tailor our process in ways that we are allowed to do, but that require a lot of high-level leadership involvement in a lot of cases. And so I would say the two key elements that we brought to the table is that high-level leadership attention. We have a mechanism now to surface issues like this to senior leaders to make sure that whatever authorities have to be provided from the senior leadership, we can get. And then the second piece really is the money piece, and that does become, in many cases, a challenge. Because, you know, our budgeting process is done years in advance. In many cases, you run into issues of you're starting a development program. You know, we don't develop a whole lot of, brand new technology, but you're modifying technology. And sometimes you can run into issues of new start programs. And so where we tend to have the most effort applied, although we've been successful, is in getting funding moved around in order to enable these new programs that weren't planned when the budget was laid in.
We're speaking with Andrew Hunter, director of the Joint Rapid Acquisition Office. And about that money piece, the Overseas Contingency Operations funds, do those also need reprogramming for acquisitions under the Rapid Acquisition Program?
Well, it depends. So when you're talking about most of our urgent operational needs are not off-the-shelf items. Again, we have to limit our ambitions a little bit. We have to deal in mature technology. And so we're not trying to do full-up development programs. But in many cases, it is necessary to modify something. If it was a completely off-the-shelf item, it probably wouldn't need to come through the urgent needs process. The service or unit would just be able to go buy it off the shelf. Usually there's some development involved. And when there's development involved, you get into needing development or procurement dollars. And there's not a lot of that available within OCO. OCO is almost all operations and maintenance dollars. And so we have to have a mixture. And so there's flexible financing. Flexible funding is really key. Reprogramming has been the largest source in the last several years, and the Congress has been very supportive of that. It does take a little time, but they've been very supportive of it, and we've been very successful with reprogramming. And in most cases, it's not the initiative you're trying to fund that ever, becomes an obstacle within reprogramming it. Sometimes we get into issues with where the money is coming from that, folks don't want to see. In some cases, the money go away from another priority.
I was going to say, if you have a joint effort going, then you've got to agree among the armed services and maybe some other components of DOD how the money is apportioned among them, correct?
Yes, that's primarily the hardest part with shifting money. It's not so much everyone usually is in agreement about the thing we're trying to do. It's where does the money come from that gets a little contentious.
I guess if you're going to buy a new ship, maybe you could just say, hey, why don't we all gang up on the Coast Guard? I'm just kidding about that one. Now, you mentioned the need for leadership attention and the finance, but there's another one I wanted to ask you about, and that's requirements. It sounds like you would have to have pretty definitely nailed down requirements before embarking on this process.
Yeah, absolutely. Requirements are critical. So first of all, validating the need itself is a critical part of our process that requires discipline, that not everything that might be desired is necessarily absolutely needed. We also try to be pretty disciplined about using the urgent needs process primarily to acquire capabilities the department doesn't already have. If we have a capability and we're concerned that we may not have as much of it as we would like, generally speaking, that what we work to do is reprioritize the assets that we have. But when there's a gap, when there's something that we need that we don't own in the DoD inventory, that's when we go out to acquire it. So our requirements process is pretty disciplined in trying to make sure that before we designate something as urgent, that it's really something we don't already have that we can't do another way, like a change in tactics or something to that effect. So we have to be disciplined on the front end. Then we also have to be disciplined in what we try to achieve. So you do have to deal in mature technologies because, you know, you can't invent on a schedule. You can't wish away technical complexity. You have to accept that what we can get and within a year is what we can get within a year, and the user, the warfighter, has to assess whether, you know, whether that capability that we think we can deliver is worth, you know, the improvement is worth going after. And I will say in most cases they do. But in a lot of cases, when we validate a requirement, when we go to fill it, we may not fill 100%. You know, we're dealing more in that 75-80% solution space that Secretary Gates talked about.
And once all of those pieces align, what is the usual methodology in terms of contract vehicles? Do you sometimes able to use GSA schedules? Do you go to full and open competitions? Can you use some of the GWACs? How does that work?
Yeah, well, of course, as the department's approach is we use competition wherever possible. And so that's always, if we can, we want to do that. The nature of rapid acquisition is, in a lot of cases, that we are dealing with incremental improvements or modifications to existing systems. You know, so we may discover that we need a new sensor capability, and what we'll find is the easiest way to achieve that may be to modify a sensor on an existing aircraft. And so in a lot of cases, the contracts are in place, and what we're doing is either leveraging those existing contracts or modifying those existing contracts to add capability to an existing platform or existing system. That's not in all cases, but in a lot of cases, that's where we are. You know, when there's no other way, when we want to acquire something truly new and we don't have anywhere in the inventory and we don't have a contract, then we may have to go towards, you know, a full and open competition if we can, if we have that option, or if we don't have that option, maybe a sole source approach. You know, as far as the supply schedules and the GWACs, we obviously like to use those when they're applicable. A lot of the stuff, as I mentioned, that we're dealing with is somewhat developmental. There's at least a certain amount of development and modification, and so you know, the schedules may not always support that approach.